This is 4:55 on Friday, October 18th.
And this guy's talking about how most people don't use
Good morning. I think I'm finally ready. So today I want to talk about the select system call and what it's for and how we use it. And then if there's time, I also want to tell you about an approach to handling multiple terminal sessions that may prove useful for this, because you're going to have a lot of different programs running all at the same time. So that's the agenda. Any questions before we start about the assignment or whatever? All right, good. So, in the assignment and in other situations in life, you end up having the need to have multiple file descriptors. Call this the problem. We have multiple file descriptors, any one of which could be the next one to have data available for reading. Or writing, or suffering an error. Okay, so this is exactly the case that arises in the router's programming assignment. You've got all these sockets, file descriptors, that are connected to the neighbors. And any one of those neighbors can be the next one to send you something. You're expected to process it as soon as it arrives. And so solution, you can't just read a file descriptor. You can't just do a read on one of the file descriptors, correct? Because that one will block and you won't be able to look at any of the others. So we need a form of multiplexing within the program that lets you pass multiple file descriptors and tell you which ones become ready first. Okay, so the notion here is that a file descriptor has some state associated with it, which is not ready or ready to perform I/O. And this applies to both reading and writing, although for the purposes that we're doing, we're not going to worry about writing, because writing is, at least in the program that we're working with, is not ever going to actually block anything. You're going to be able to write the little bit of data that you do and have it sent, and there won't be any issue about that. So we'll only be worrying about reading. So these multiplexing system calls are select, poll, epoll. Select and poll are long-time classic Unix-y things. And in the Windows 32 API, there's a select system call. Now, the main difference for Windows is that this only works for sockets. Whereas with Linux, or Unixy systems, file descriptors stand for pretty much everything that you can do I/O on, right? You can do I/O on pipes, you can do I/O on Unix domain sockets, you could do I/O on ordinary files. All kinds of different things use file descriptors in Unix, and they all can play in these different calls. So the one that we're going to look at and use in the project is select. We'll talk about why select is a little deficient compared with epoll when we get to the end, but we'll need to, in order to understand why it's deficient, we'll need to look at the details. So I'm doing something here that may be helpful. I'm running a record my desktop session here on the screen so that I'm recording hopefully both what I'm saying and what I'm writing in a movie form, so you'll be able to look at it later. We'll see if it works. It's been working pretty good in 355, but I haven't checked it for this class, so that should be helpful. Okay, so select. Basic form. So this is essentially the header declaration of the select function that implements the select system call. Explain each of these things. It's kind of hairy in terms of all right, so that's the prototype for the function, and I'm going to go through and talk about each of the things, although I'm going to do them in a kind of different order than they show up there. So this FD set type is a representation of a set of file descriptors. And I'll go through how you get one and all that when we look at the use of this thing. We'll actually set up a use of select. But FD sets are essentially bit vectors. It's a bit vector with one in the position corresponding ones in the positions corresponding to included FDs. So if I want to have in the set file descriptors 1, 3, and 5, the FD set looks like okay, so this is position 0, this is position 3, this is position 5. Okay, so that's the representation of a set of file descriptors. And you see that it takes three of those represent, it takes pointers to three of those because it gives you the ability to separately find about out about things that are ready, things that ready for reading, ready for writing, and things that maybe have been closed out from under you or have had an error of some kind. We're not going to use the writing and the exceptions. The other thing that it takes is this struct time val. Okay, which is a representation of some number of seconds and microseconds. And how many people have used the sleep system call? Anybody use that? It sleeps in increments of
seconds.
I think it's seconds. Anyway, this gives you a way to do fine-grained sleeps. So if you want to have your select system call, which now will block until something happens, if you want to have something happens, include being the passage of a certain amount of time, you can do that by passing it a timeout time val struct. And we'll see again how that works. I forgot to say something about FD sets. There's only one approved way to manipulate FD sets, and that's using the macros that are provided. So, if I have FD set as a declaration, then I can initialize it by calling the FD0 macro, spell it right, rather spell it there. Okay, so readDS here is declared to be an FD set. I initialize it by calling FD0 on it. I can add things to it by calling FD set. Okay, so that will set the bit position corresponding to a particular FD. I can clear the bit position corresponding to a particular FD. And I can test as in if do something. Okay? So I can test whether it's set, I can set it, clear it, or empty it. All right? So that's the way that you're going to build up the FD sets. We're going to talk about some techniques, programming techniques to avoid having to have lots of loops that set those things over and over again and things like that. Okay. The return value from select. Right? It was declared to return an int. So what is that int? Zero means, well, actually, let me do the greater than zero case first. Greater than zero means there are res greater than zero means there are res ready descriptors. Okay, so select is telling you that you passed in all those descriptors and a certain number of them are now ready to perform I/O. The rule is, at least the rule as I learned it, although I didn't see it in the man page, the rule is that if a file descriptor is ready on return from select, you are supposed to do an operation on it before calling select again. And I think this is not so much a restriction of the select interface as it is a way to keep your head straight around what select means. If select says a file descriptor is ready, you don't read it and you call select again, what's select going to do? It's going to return to you immediately. Okay? Now, and if you keep doing that, you can end up in an infinite loop. Right? If you just, like, if two things are ready and you process one of them and then call select again, it will return again, but maybe something else has come along in front of the one that was already ready. So, okay. So that was one thing. It returns zero. It still means there are res ready descriptors. Okay? So what does that mean? It means that a timeout occurred. Okay, so if a timeout occurred, then you know that a certain amount of time went by, no descriptor became ready, and you need to do whatever you want to do when timeouts occur. Okay, so that's how you tell that a timeout occurred. And res less than zero, res equal minus one, it's the typical Unix system call convention, returns minus one, and you're supposed to look at the ErrorNo variable to find out the cause of the error. And have you guys heard about p-error? Do you know about p-error function? Some do, but most don't. Okay. So the p-error function, let me just do something here. Print a system error message. Okay? So you print out a string that you pass it, and then it passes, and then it prints out a description of the cause of the error. Pretty cool. Prints it on standard error output descriptor. You can actually look up error strings corresponding to error nodes in SysErrorList as well, but again, I think for the purpose of this assignment, just if you get minus ones, you should use PError. That's the easy thing to do. Or if you want to format your own error messages, the stir error function will convert the last error no to a string so that you can interpret it. The problem with the error no is that it's just this integer, this magic number that, you know, it means whatever they say it means, and to know what it means, you have to look it up. So those two functions are very handy. So PError and stir error give human sensible strings for that. Okay? And you can look in the man page for select to see what causes particular errors to occur. And so sort of what the more global reason might be for a particular error to occur. So that's worth knowing about and doing. All right. Okay. So how to use select? So the general strategy is build an array of all the sockets FDs of interest fill in the array as you create the sockets. So just become it's essentially an int array of the small integers that correspond to the file descriptors. On Windows, of course, the thing that you have here is not small integers, they're socket handles, but the idea is the same. Compute max descriptor the largest numerical socket number. Not port, socket. Right? So sockets are file descriptors. File descriptors are small integers. And so you're going to need to know what is the largest numerical socket descriptor in order to use select. Next thing, build your FD set for each thing, for each element of the array Oh, before we do that, we need to FD0 the FD0. You can pick a better name than array for that. Okay, so that just builds up the list of read descriptors. Initialize the timeout. So suppose if you have cell timeout is one of these struct time vals, and assuming that we don't want sort of really fine-grained timeouts, you can just do that. Now, this is sort of the overall setup. And then we go into a loop, which I'll just say while one for the time being. I'll explain why we need to do this in a moment. So make yourself another FD set and initialize it from the full set that you had. And then call select passing max descriptor plus one. Okay, so just the same arguments that we saw before in the overall description of select. But now you see why you need to have max descriptor, because you have to pass it as the first argument to select. Why does select need to know that? Because there can be a lot of the file descriptor sets can be rather large, and it's much more efficient if select doesn't have to look at all the possible bits, but only the ones up to that many that you're actually using. So that's why you have to pass it. And it needs to be max descriptor plus one because of zero, right? Because zero can be a file descriptor. So you're telling it how many it has to look at, not the number of the largest one. So max descriptor plus one, and that's max descriptor across all of the file descriptor sets, but we've only got the one, so That's fine. Okay. If res is less than zero, error handling. Else, if res equals zero, timeout handling. Else, out of room. Else. Okay, so here's where the fun part begins. So select has told us some things are ready, some number greater than zero, but which ones are they? We have to know that before we actually can do any I.O. And the way we do that is select modifies the descriptor set that's passed to it. So we go through our array for I equals zero, less than num sockets, plus plus, if FD is set, so if the bit is still set in the descriptor set, then we need to do IO, in fact, be socket read. In our case, along with the other arguments to receive, and do whatever processing is needed. All right. So that's it for the if, the for, one more for the else. Okay, so you see the loop goes through all the sockets that are in the array and checks to see whether it's initialized. Notice that this is the number of sockets now, which is the size of the array. It's not the same thing as max descriptor. It's a different value because this is the number of things. Max descriptor is the largest thing. And you can easily get this wrong and still have a program that appears to work because socket numbers are small integers. They're allocated from zero and, you know, you can sort of go outside your array bounds without maybe causing too much trouble, or maybe you pass number of sockets to select instead of max FD. And you get a max FD plus one, and your program works for most of your routers, but not all of them, you know, that sort of stuff. So it's important to just be really strict with yourself about making sure that you pass the right things at the right place in this pattern, because the type system and the operating system can't help you. All right, so we've now gone through there. To say. So the treatment of the timeout structure by select is a little strange in that the standards don't say which of the following two behaviors it is supposed to have. One possible behavior of the timeout structure is that when select returns, the timeout structure is just is as it was when you passed it in. Okay, so that's one possibility. And many Unix systems behave that way, and I don't know how Windows behaves, but I suspect it probably behaves that way. Linux systems, on the other hand, when select returns, tells you how much more time is left in the original timeout period. So it actually modifies the structure that's been passed in here so that the next time you go around the loop, you will get your timeout at the time that you expected originally, instead of arbitrarily, you know, at the next 30 seconds. So in our program, I said, you know, have a timeout of 30 seconds. If there's sufficient stuff going on, you might actually never get a timeout under that scenario. But the way it works in Linux is that because it subtracts the amount of time that has passed every time, you will eventually get a timeout. Now, that means, however, that when the timeout occurs here in timeout handling, you had better reinitialize the time val, because otherwise it is zero, and a zero time val says return immediately. Okay, so you'll go into an infinite loop getting zero all the time if you don't do that. So in timeout handling, we had better reinitialize cell timeout. Okay, and then the other thing is that actually, the way I did this, it actually works. Let me put in the last curly brace. Last curly brace. So notice that the other thing I did was I initialized temp read D's from read D's at the beginning of the loop, so that would happen every time. Because notice that in this case, select has modified temp read D's, and if you don't reinitialize it, gradually all the file descriptors after the first time they get used will drop out and no longer participate, and that's not what you want either. So this is the overall structure of how you use select. Any questions about this? Yeah,
so basically select just tells you which sockets are ready.
That's its job. Yes, it tells you which ones are ready. It doesn't do the I/O itself. Yeah.
So then, since receive is blocking, it lays out where it's a respond to this guy, then respond to the next guy since it's blocking, right?
So, it's not multi-threaded at all, and because it was set in here,
yeah,
you're guaranteed that this will not block.
Right. Sure.
Okay. That's what we've been shooting for here, is that you're guaranteed that this will not block. There are other schemes that involve setting file descriptors to non-blocking status, but you still want to use select or poll in that case as well, because otherwise you will have busy waiting loops, right? And even if the descriptor is non-blocking, so that's good to know. Okay, so like I said, there's another system called poll that you can read about that does essentially the same thing. It could be used instead. I think it's just more convenient if everybody uses select for this assignment. But there's another one called epoll that is a variant on poll that works with sort of different sets of parameters and solves the problem that you may observe here. The problem with select, both select and poll, the original versions, is that they have this linear search through all of the file descriptors every time one of them becomes ready. So in very large server applications that may have thousands of connections going at the same time, this is pretty inefficient because even though every test is fast, you're wasting a lot of time just checking for checking one bit at a time to see who's ready. So what ePoll does is it changes the interface so that what the ePoll wait call does is it actually returns you a list of the ready descriptors, or an array of the ready descriptors. And so you can directly go to that and just process the ones that are ready and not have to worry about it. And notice that with a fast machine, it's very likely that the normal thing is that there's only one ready descriptor at a time, because things happen out there in the world, but the machine is fast, so it notices something happened and goes off to process it. You do 10,000 file descriptors worth of searching to process one file descriptor. So ePoll is Linux's answer to that. Other systems have other answers. The Windows interface has an asynchronous I/O scheme that does a callback on the descriptors that are ready. So that's cool. Okay. So this is sort of the structure that you need for the assignment. All of your socket descriptors are going to go into your descriptor set. All right. Yeah.
How big is FD set?
It's actually a compile time option for the system library. It's probably 256 at least. You're not going to have trouble. Why?
How would you go about getting 1,000?
To get 1,000, you sort of have to compile your own version of the library and things like that. The poll interface doesn't have that restriction. Okay, this one is restricted to a modest number, not one that you're ever going to hit. But in.
So you have to compile your own version.
You'd have to compile your own version of it, yeah. There's a system constant called max FD set or something, or FD set size, or you could read about it in the select man page. Talks about that. Other questions about this thing? So I strongly encourage you to look at the manual page for select before embarking on this, but it isn't sort of a tutorial in the way that what I did here is. It tells you about the system call, but it doesn't tell you sort of about all the stuff that needs to go around the system call. Make sure that you read everything that's returned. Okay, now the other thing I wanted to mention today is that you may find it handy to use a program called Screen. And, it looks just like my shell did before, except it's actually a recursive call that's invoked a new shell. It has a hotkey that is Control A and then C that creates a new shell. So echo 2. And then I can say Control A N and it goes back and forth between the two shells. Okay? And you do a whole bunch of these. So if you have a lot of programs running that you want to interact with, this is a way to not have a lot of windows scattered all over your screen, but instead just hop between them. Another good thing about Screen is that you can Control A and D and disconnect from it. Okay, so now I'm back to my original shell. And later I can come along and say screen-r and I reconnect to those. And this will work even if you've done things like log out and other things. So you can have these things that are just running there and come back. And so sometimes, or you can even reconnect from a different machine to one of these with an appropriate authentication. So that's cool. And one more thing, and I don't have, and there's still 2 minutes left, so don't go yet. There's another thing that's built on top of screen, whose name I cannot remember, that actually allows you to take one window like this and carve it up into multiple independent shell interaction.
Terminator, yeah.
No, I think it starts with a B, but I don't.
In
whole term. Anyway, different implementations of this, and so that could be really handy if I could remember the name to tell you to be able to see all of your routers at the same time in one window. Right, that would be pretty cool because bouncing around between windows to see things is pain, and they're not going to be producing very much output, so you might as well look at them. Now, the other thing is that I looked again. Remember I said I thought the change link program in the skeleton for the assignment was wrong last time when I looked at it? I looked at it again. It's actually right. It's communicating with the routers at both ends of the link and telling them that the link value has changed. And I was confused because it only needs one socket to do that because it's an unconnected socket. It can use the send to system call for a datagram socket to send a message to different machines, and it does. So it's right. I don't need to change it. So I will be gone and therefore miss office hours all of next week. I'm sorry. Professor Gamage will be here on Monday and Wednesday to lecture on the link layer chapter 5. So he'll get you started with that. I will be back on Friday and continue with that. And what we will do on Friday is the exam review for the exam that's the following Monday.
Do you have any office hours today?
I don't have time today either. So, given all this, I will be in email contact pretty much all the time. So if you have questions, email. Be happy to do that, and if we need to have a phone call or something, that can probably be arranged too, but usually things can be handled by email. Okay? Pardon? Chapter 4 is due Wednesday. Yeah.